Ghosts. Have they become a cliché? Or can we once again examine this phenomena seriously? After all, isn't it really our own afterlife we're curious about? Let's delve a little deeper on Jim Harold's Ghost Insight. Welcome to Ghost Insight. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you today. And I think we have a neat one for you, a 10 on the creepy factor, which is always kind of a fun thing. Now, when we think about hauntings, primarily we think about houses, right? Haunted houses. But our guest today is going to share with us how many other things can be haunted. And she's written a book on just that subject. The new book is called Haunted Stuff, Demonic Dolls, Screaming Skulls, and Other Creepy Collectibles. The author is Stacey Graham, and this is not her first foray into the supernatural. She spent a good part of the last 20 years as a ghost hunter, sitting in dark attics, waiting to poke the paranormal to see if it giggles. When not wrestling ghosts, she enjoys reading Jane Austen and writing zombie poetry, humor, and ghost stories. She's the author of The Girl's Ghost Hunting Guide and The Zombie Tarot, plus numerous short stories. She says she lives outside of Washington, D.C. with her husband, 5 daughters, and festive woodland creatures. Please visit her websites at StaceyIGraham.com and WeGhosties.com. She's also on Twitter and Facebook. Stacey Graham, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. A pleasure to be here.
The thing I like about this book is it's something different. Usually we hear about ghost stories. Those are the books that I put out, admittedly, but there are a lot of ghost story books out there. A lot of stories about haunted houses. Maybe not so many about haunted collectibles, haunted stuff. What got you to go down this particular spooky road?
Well, I am a big fan of ghost stories and campfire stories like yours. And with haunted objects, I just thought there's some things out there that weren't explored enough. And when I go online and I look for books to bring into my own collection, because I've got a large collection of ghost story books, I didn't see anything that was really, you know, resonating with me. There are a few out there, and I'm so happy to have them in my collection, but I thought maybe I could contribute a little more. So I went online, I did research, I did a ton of research for this book, and gathered what I thought might be the most fun story collections to put into this book.
Now, here's a question for you. And you talk about this, I think, in the book, about how we interpret ghosts. Can you say something about that in how maybe, and I'm not sure if you cover this in the book or not, but how we think of spirits and entities appearing and that kind of things, but we don't necessarily think about physical objects being haunted. Talk a little bit about that.
In my experience as a ghost hunter, which, like you said, it spans over 20 years, I noticed that, you know, when we interpret ghosts, we usually see them physically, or we'll get a mental image in our mind. But there are some things, such as haunted objects, like a haunted house or a figurine or a ceramic cupcake, that sometimes can give off those vibrations. And, you know, we'll see something, you know, move out of the corner of our eyes. And we can interpret it as either being interacting with that ghost, or maybe itself is a possessed possession. And so when I go into the book, in the beginning of the book, I try to talk about how the ghost might be able to kind of wiggle into those molecules and see how it possesses that one object. And we're not terribly sure how that happens. I'll be flat out honest and say nobody really knows for sure, but that's part of the fun and the mystery of it. So I like to explore what things could be, what you can absolutely kind of rule out, and how, you know, you interpret it might be different than how I interpret it. But that's also part of the fun.
Now, let me ask you this, because it's always been my feeling that not every object maybe somebody owns, but maybe something they've had a long time and a loved one has passed and you have it in your hands. I think particularly about an old pocket knife my grandfather had, and he died when I was very young, I think probably 10 or 11, about 12 years old. And I got a pocket knife that he had owned, very old. And when I hold that, I almost kind of feel his essence. Is that my mind playing tricks on me, or is that something that you found repeated in your research?
Well, not necessarily. It's not all in your mind. I think that in some objects, part of our essence has been transferred into that object. And a lot of times it could be an object that meant an awful lot to an individual, and then that, you know, it was passed down through generations. But it could also be an object that was part of something more dramatic, let's say, like the chair that Ted Bundy was electrocuted in, which is a story in the book. And there are stories revolving around that chair now of him being seen later sitting in that chair and taunting the guards. So it's kind of a spooky, spooky story. So with your pocket knife, there absolutely could be a sort of a ghostly residue that is still imprinted on that, and it's passed down.
And I don't necessarily, something like that, I don't feel it's negative. I just, you know, I might take it out and look at it once a year or something. It's in a box somewhere and I look at it, and it just, and again, it's emotional. So maybe some of that is internal, but you just do wonder about that. And I've had that repeated over the years with different things that, belong to different loved ones. I'm guessing most people have had something like that. Mm-hmm. Now, something you talk about in this book that really creeps me out, and I think that maybe if you see the cover of this, is a fantastic cover of a rather creepy looking doll, is chapter 2, Demonic Dolls and Creepy Collectibles. Talk to us about some demonic dolls.
Well, a lot of the demonic dolls that I have in the book are some of the classic stories about Annabelle, which was very documented with the Warrens. And her story is that this doll was sort of adopted by two roommates, and the ensuing days they would find the doll in different positions on one of the roommates' beds, and it eventually ended scratching a friend of hers, and he had a dream of laying on the couch, and suddenly he found the doll was crawling up his body and trying to strangle him.
Ooh.
And it was terrible. And so they decided to get rid of the doll, and they contact a medium who told her that the doll had been possessed by a spirit. But the Warrens came in and they decided that this was not probably accurate. And it was not a little girl, as the medium had told them, but instead it was a demon. And so they took the Annabelle the doll with them out of the roommate's possession. And she ended up staying in their museum at their house of haunted objects. And one of the fun things that I read about was, as they were on their way home from the roommate's place, the doll started to make the car swerve back and forth, and they had to actually pull over and douse it with some holy water in order to make it behave. And then they'd come home and the doll would levitate, and they placed her in a secure area in their basement of the museum. So that's kind of a spooky one. And then there's also Robert the haunted doll in Key West.
Yes.
And he's very famous, and I don't want to get on his bad side, but he's
me neither.
He's been known to stare at people as they walk by, or he'll turn. He likes to eat peppermints. They'll find peppermints that they put inside of his case to kind of help him, you know, behave at night. And when they come home, the peppermints are gone. And he'll turn his head to look at people. Very, very creepy, but fascinating story about his time there. He's also been known to, before he was in their museum, he would be seen staring out the window as children would pass by. So there's a long, long history with Robert, and he creeps me out completely.
Yeah, I totally understand that. I could see how that would happen. Now, are there kinds of collectibles that are haunted that people wouldn't necessarily assume were? I mean, dolls, I think a lot of people have heard about, of course, Annabelle and Robert the Haunted Doll and so forth. So that's kind of, and they just kind of look creepy, you know. But right. Are there maybe some things haunted that we wouldn't necessarily think of?
Well, one of my favorite stories is my friend Beth Bartlett. She is an author in Arkansas. She owns a candy topper, a Scooby-Doo candy topper that you never think would have any, you know, paranormal activity associated with it.
Sure.
But her father passed away when she was very young. And she found a few years ago that on the anniversary of his death, she was thinking of him and the candy topper would glow. And she thought that was rather odd since she hadn't turned it on. So she checked it out and her husband checked it out and there was no issue with the batteries, but it kept glowing. Well, unfortunately, last October, her house had burned down and the everything was lost. And so, including the candy topper, which was very tragic because she felt she had lost this connection to her father. And we just learned that recently on the anniversary of his death, the in their new place, the light is now starting to come on in their closet and show that he's still around. So there's still that connection. But the candy topper, that was unique. I haven't heard of anything quite like that before.
No, that's true. Now, one thing that you talk about in the book, and we did have a campfire story like this. I think it was a haunted bed, but you don't necessarily think about furniture being haunted. But I guess if you think about it, if somebody sits in a chair or on a couch or sleeps in a bed for a number of years, if something's going to grab somebody's essence, that would be it. What did you find out about frightening furniture?
There's a few things. There's a famous Busby Stoop chair that is very old, and that had a cursed to it by a young man who had gotten into an argument with his father-in-law many years ago in England. And he ended up, during this argument, threatening his father-in-law not to sit in his favorite chair at a bar. And his father-in-law did. And later that night, the young man killed his father-in-law, drug his body into the woods, and left it there. The next morning, the man was discovered to be missing, and they found him. And they quickly discovered that it was the son-in-law who did it. Well, as they were taking him to the gallows, he put a curse on this chair that anyone who sat in this chair would come to an untimely end. And everybody kind of, you know, laughed it off.
Right.
But they found, as the years had gone on, that anyone who sat in the chair, well, not everyone, but some people that sat in the chair would come to kind of a grisly end. Not that long afterwards. And finally, last century, they placed it in a museum up on a wall so that it won't hurt anybody again.
Wow. Wow. You just wonder if the luck of what the luck of the museum will be. And that's an interesting one. I'm kind of jumping around the book a little bit. One of the things you talk about is the Hope Diamond. Mm-hmm. And I believe that now belongs to the United States. Is the property? Am I right? Is that the property of the United States now, the Smithsonian? And what I wonder is, and you can talk about the history of the Hope Diamond a little bit because it's always fascinated me. But the U.S. hasn't had a great, last 15 years or so, and I'm wondering if we're getting a little bit of taste of the Hope Diamond medicine. Tell us about the Hope Diamond.
Well, the Hope Diamond has a fascinating history. The beginnings, of course, are always kind of shrouded in legend. But as the Hope Diamond was kind of passed along and sold, because it was this beautiful, large diamond, a lot of its owners had come to rather unfortunate demises. There were sultans who they gave it to their favorite concubine, and she was ended up murdered, and then he was murdered. And as it was passed down, the most recent one was the woman who owned it, and her name is, let me make sure I have her name correct here, Evelyn Walsh McLean. She owned it in the early 1900s, and she didn't want to give it up, and her family kind of fell apart. So her husband passed away and her children passed away, and Harry Winston ended up purchasing the diamond, and he didn't want any curse coming to him. And so he sold it to the Smithsonian to kind of keep it out of the public view and keep them safe, but also to establish the Smithsonian's and the United States establishing a national gem collection. So the story goes is that it was delivered in a brown paper package to the museum, but the delivery man, he lost his house in a fire. He got into car accidents, and he crushed his leg in a truck accident not soon afterwards. And so, you have to wonder, is the jewel itself cursed, or, is it just incredible bad luck? Now, I've seen, I live outside of Washington, D.C., so I've seen the jewel itself, and it's behind very thick glass, but you have to wonder, is it there to protect us or to protect us from them?
I understand what you're saying. Now, let me ask you, as you've done this, Al, I'm obviously you have this long-term interest in the paranormal, but I'm guessing that, you know, there's probably also sometimes a healthy dose of skepticism about specific claims. I think most of us who are interested in this, but you know, our intelligent folks go in with their eyes wide open. Did doing this book in any way change your perception of haunted objects? Did you kind of go in thinking, I'm not sure there's something to this, and did you come out with maybe a different thought? I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but just want to see kind of where you started and where you ended up after doing this project.
Well, I've been, you know, in this game for a very long time, and I come at it with a more of a scientific and skeptical eye. I enjoy the stories, but I always want to know more. I want to know the background. I want to know if it can be substantiated. And some of the creepy stories I found in the book, you know, you just have to wonder. I have one story of a couple that I met, and they... their child, unfortunately, had passed away. And when they came home from the hospital, they were looking at her portrait on the mantelpiece. Right. And as they were staring at it, they saw the child's mouth start moving. Now, they couldn't hear anything, ooh, but now I've met these people. They are straightforward, no nonsense. They, you know, there was no flights of fancy at all. And so they, you know, were absolutely believable in this. And when you see, you know, the people affected by this and you absolutely believe them, you start to wonder if there's a little bit more to these stories than just, you know, it was a trick of the light. And so that one creeped me out.
Now, do you think that there's a trickster element that goes on with this, you know, where maybe, and something that always concerns me, because we've all lost people close to us, and I think many of us would love to hear from them, but we're almost afraid of this trickster element that maybe there's something posing as something that's benevolent when it may actually be malevolent. What do you think about that, and is anything that you ran across in your research for this book?
Well, in my own experiences, I have not run across anything particularly nasty. And so my belief is, if you were kind of a, you know, rotten person to begin with, after you pass away, you're not going to become all cuddly. Right. And, but I've never, you know, run into an evil spirit, actually. And so I believe it's possible that something could be posing, but I don't think that many people are in danger of that happening with a haunted object.
Now, something you talk about in the book, and this fascinates me, because the ocean can be very spooky. In fact, coincidentally, last night I was just watching a documentary on shipwrecks. They were talking about the Edmund Fitzgerald up mm-hmm. in the Great Lakes that sank, now almost 40 years ago, and the mystery around that. You have a chapter called Spooky Seas. Tell us about sailing the spooky seas.
Well, I've always had a soft spot for shipwrecks, and the mystery involved with them. I was training to become an underwater archaeologist when I was in college. I really loved the sea. And so when I had the opportunity to do this book, I thought that having a chapter on shipwrecks and that those just crazy stories that revolve around them would be kind of a fun thing to do, because not all haunted objects are small. They're not going to fit in your pocket. They're not going to sit on your mantelpiece. And by having the shipwreck stories, I thought we could expound a little bit more on what our thoughts were about objects themselves. So what I found were a lot of like old stories. I would love to hear from anybody if they have any newer ones, but the ones that I found that resonated the most with me were ones stories about the Queen Mary. That's one that is recent. Everybody can go visit them. And that has a fascinating history as she had her different incarnations through the years. And I think that just with water being such a conduit that we found as paranormal investigators, as holding spirits and kind of holding their essence, you know, you're just surrounding yourself with all this possibility.
Another thing you covered in the story that I love old Hollywood, always fascinated by it. And specifically, you talk about some different stars and objects that they were associated with. And one of those that I've always found one of the most fascinating and frightening is the story of James Dean and the Little Bastard. Now, for folks that thought that I've gone rogue and I'm working blue now, the Little Bastard was the name of James Dean's Porsche 550 Spider, the one that he died in. Tell us about the Little Bastard. How did it get that name and a little bit about it?
Well, the Little Bastard was this beautiful little silver Porsche 550, like you said. And he had bought this car, and his friend, Alec Guinness, from Star Wars fame and other movies, had told him, this car is going to kill you. You really, you know, this is not a good car for you. It was born bad. And James Dean didn't believe it. He was a young, virile star. Nothing could stop him. And so he hopped into the car one day with his friend, and he was on his way to a race in Salinas, California in 1955. And they were involved in a head-on collision, who made a sudden left, in front of them. Unfortunately, Dean took the brunt of the impact, and he went to the hospital. Unfortunately, he passed away on the way with a broken neck and internal injuries. But afterwards, you know, everyone thought it was a horrible thing, but they had to deal with the car. So George Barris, who was the king of customizers, he bought the wreck of the Little Bastard to sell for scrap, but it wasn't finished in his, you know, his dastardly deeds here. The car ended up being this terrible presence that affected a lot of people. It broke people's legs. The garage that it was stored in, it caught on fire. It was on display at Sacramento High School, and the car fell, and a student actually broke his hip while he was viewing the car. So my most interesting part about this car is that it was moving it was moving to its last known spot. It was going to Los Angeles. When it was loaded into the train, it was the last time they see it. When they removed the seal of the boxcar and opened the doors, it was gone. The Little Bastard has disappeared, and it hasn't been seen since.
Wow. That's weird. That is just plain old weird. Based on that and some other stories you have in here, do you just think that certain things are just jinxed, whether they're airplanes or cars or dolls or whatever? Do you think there's something about them that's jinxed, or I don't know if it's evil would be the right thing, but something about specific objects?
I think that's possible. I think it's there's some things that are haunted by, you know, it's an imprint of a circumstance, you know, like a murder or the big rush of emotion. It could be love, it could be hate, but there are some objects that are just bad, just jinxed. And I think the Little Bastard could be one of them, excuse my French. And I think they're, you know, the Hope Diamond, for some reason, you know, it could be the curse that was placed on it in the beginning, though, we have no, you know, verification that happened. I think it's possible. It's, you know, one of those things that you're not quite sure about. And so that always gives it a little thrill when you read about it.
Well, here's a question for you. I just thought of this. Okay, let's say that somebody from the Smithsonian whoever the head of the Smithsonian is, who has the ultimate power, is a big Stacey Graham fan. And she or he have been reading your works and say, you know, I think she's just the person. She's done all this research on the Hope Diamond and these haunted objects. I want to gift her with the Hope Diamond. Scot-free. It's all hers. She can do whatever she wants with it. She can sell it. She can keep her, whatever. Would you take the gift?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
I would look fabulous in that diamond.
You've got more guts than me. More guts than me.
I'm not scared of anything. I've seen a lot of weird things in my years of investigating. And, you know, I'd chance it. I'd never say no. So I think it would be a great opportunity to study it. Of course, then I would study it. I have a section in the book on how to kind of do a mini ghost hunt and how to learn more about the object that you have that you may or may not think is haunted. And so I would be doing, I would probably set up electronic voice phenomena recordings, see if there's anything associated, because even though it's jinxed, maybe it's haunted. We don't know. We could figure something out. And then I would, videotape it and all the others and see if there's anything associated with it.
Now, another thing, I think this is an interesting section you have in the book. You talk about different places that might be kind of treasure troves to find haunted objects. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I thought that was pretty cool.
Sure. Well, I wanted to, I figured people that are going to read this book, one, just love the stories, but two, they might want to find a haunted object of their own. And there's several places that are good to find, and a lot of places that I do not recommend finding a haunted object. So, but places that you want to check out would be antique stores. You could find something in even thrift stores. A lot of times people have, they just know something's wrong with an object and they want to get rid of it. And so they'll donate it or they'll sell it at a flea market. And so my suggestion is if you find something like this and, pay attention to what your body is telling you, if your instincts are saying that something's a little off on this thing, but you want to explore it more, talk to the owner at the flea market or someone at the counter and see if they know any of the about the history of the object. And then if you want to, you can, dig a little deeper in your research. One place I would not suggest getting haunted objects would be eBay or other auction sites. Now, I do know there are some great sellers out there who firmly believe that they have haunted objects, but I want to caution your readers and your listeners that, a lot of times there's auction sellers out there that are not quite reputable. And, you want to be aware of things that say in, all the keywords, gypsy, haunted, cursed, and all these different things. And they take a picture and it's got, this foggy background on it so you can barely see whatever it is. A lot of times I think they're just trying to unload their junk drawers and you need to be careful.
Here, I have this haunted butter knife, only $75.
Exactly. Well, since haunted objects relates to any object, it's possible that that butter knife could have a little, sticky paranormal goo on it. But, buyer beware. I have a friend who has bought things from auctions specifically that were haunted, and he's had some interesting stories to go along with that. So, you kind of take your chances.
We're going to give you a chance to tell people where to find all your websites and to find the book when it's released here in the next few weeks. But first, could you leave us with one of your favorite creepy collectible haunted stuff stories?
Oh, sure. I actually have a big, big soft spot for screaming skulls. I don't know why. I'm just very attracted to these insane things. But one of my favorite stories is about the Bediscombe skull in England. And it kept returning to the manor every time they tried to get rid of it. So they would get rid of it. It would start screaming. It would, and they'd have to bring it back in. And one of the most interesting ones, they dug a deep, deep hole on the property and they dropped the skull into the hole and they covered it up. And the next morning, the groundskeeper had found that it had dug itself out of the hole and waited to be brought back into the house. And that, I kind of went, all right, that's over the top. But
I guess that would be. Wow. So, Stacey Graham, where can people find everything you're up to online and where can they find the book? And actually, I realize that they can currently pre-order it.
Yes, the book is available for pre-order. It is released on August 8th, but go ahead and pre-order it now. Avoid the rush. It is available on Llewellyn.com at its publisher. Also at Amazon and Powell's Bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, all those fun places. You can look it up online. And my website is Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y, igraham.com. That's my website. And all the information is there for all of my books, The Girls Ghost Hunting Guide, where I go over for younger ghost hunters how to do a ghost hunt in a safe and effective manner without, you know, getting crazy and without running around like you're on a television show. It's also a great sleepover book. So it's got recipes and fun games and things like that. It's a great book. And The Zombie Tarot, that's also available at all your online booksellers. But please check with your local bookseller as well and support your local booksellers. Yay! Most of the books are right there. You can see it. We Ghosties is the name of my beginning guide to ghost hunting. I have a website called Ask a Ghost Hunter at askaghosthunter.blogspot.com. And let's see, Zombie Tarot can be found everywhere. So I think
you're everywhere. You're everywhere. You've got it covered. Well, Stacey Graham, thank you so much for joining us and great success with the book. I think it's going to be very, very popular.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And thank you for joining us for Ghost Insight. We certainly appreciate it. The book is Haunted Stuff. Demonic dolls, screaming skulls, and other creepy collectibles. Our guest has been Stacey Graham. We'll talk to you next time on Ghost Insight. Bye-bye, everybody.